extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am, of course, not Andrew Wiebe. I am David Gossett. Andrew is off gallivanting through the world with zero cares, zero issues. He lives one of those lighthearted lives because he has, you know, nothing tying him down. And I'm proud of him, but I'm excited to be here with you, Kalen Carr, and Michael LaHood, a nice little loan here midway through the season to bring us fresh legs, a little bit of quality in midfield. Michael, I'm excited to have you control the pace of play for us at times.
Thank you. Better you than some of my previous coaches, but we're not going to go deep into that.
I read the YouTube comments last time we had LaHood on, and they're, you know, which is a dangerous game to play, but you know, I live in
it. Oh, jeez.
But they were pretty positive, I think, on the chemistry within the group overall. So, I mean, a lot to live up to today.
Kalen's already preparing himself because he actually took over for Andrew Wiebe on Instant Replay yesterday. So he's just getting into the comment section early on just to make sure that he really has a pulse on what the fans feel. We've got a big show coming up for you here today. A couple of big things going on around MLSsoccer.com. The call-up will be out tomorrow with Vanni Sartini to help them preview the Canadian Championship game, which we will talk a ton about. And of course, I don't know, Vanni Sartini's like the best person in MLS. So that's going to be an awesome show. We have a special Clubbing Country Extra Time episode that is out there on YouTube. We went through our depth charts, both for the U.S. and Canada. We did some big debates. We talked about some of the opponents coming up, preparing for the World Cup, and everything else around that. Matt Doyle, some really good breakdown videos around who could be the number nine for the U.S. men's national team. And of course, if you've listened to the show over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, you've heard Andrew Wiebe mention, but we are going to have a live Extra Time taping the Sunday night before the All-Star game in Minnesota. Of course, the Minnesota All-Star game will be Wednesday night, so we will be there on Sunday at Blackheart, right alongside Allianz, right next to the stadium. So it's going to be a ton of fun. I think it's myself, Charlie, and Andrew. So make sure to come on out if you're in the area. As Andrew would say, we're going to purchase a beverage. There'll be beverages, a purchase for one person each. Well, he says the word beverage so weird, and I got to make fun of him for it when he wasn't on the show. All right, coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios, we will talk about all the big stories around MLS, the Italians that have finally arrived in Canada, Gareth Bale getting his thing started on the goal-scoring side. Some young Americans continue to score some goals, some formation debates we want to have, and, of course, previewing Canadian Championship and the U.S. Open Cup semifinals coming up on Wednesday night in Sacramento and in Orlando. But let's start with the best thing you saw this weekend, and I'm going to go first. As the only person here who feels passionate about the Chicago Fire, I am going to go with my Chicago Fire, because we did a preview mid-season review show, I think, around the international break with some big topics, big picture questions. And we were asked, what's one team out of the playoffs that you guarantee will get their way back in? And I picked the Chicago Fire, who at the time were in last place in the Eastern Conference. And all of you chuckled and chortled at me and mocked me. And then right after that, the Chicago Fire were really bad still, so I didn't bring it up anymore, and I pretended that I didn't say it. And now they're good, and now they are 2 points out of the playoffs. And so I'm bringing it back up, and that was the best thing I saw this weekend, was the 3-1 win out in Vancouver. And Kalen, the floor now goes to you.
Well, I do want to add on today for my Fire fans and Section 8 that this is the a day to remember Brandon Kitchens. He was a supporter that passed away when I was playing for the club. I think he was just about a year younger than me. But I know today is the anniversary of that, so I want to just take a moment to honor that. And yeah, I was hyped to see the Fire on the right side of things getting the dub. The best thing I saw over the weekend wasn't so much a moment on the field. It was because there were some good ones. There was a lot to pick from, but it was actually the post-game interview with Jovalich, and it was with the Fox crew who were there on the scene after the Galaxy win 2-0, and Jovalich gets that second goal to clinch the game. But I just, he started off the interview and at one point he said, I am the future of the galaxy. And I could just see Alexi Lalas's face just light up. And I would say, it's not often that I agree with Alexi, which will probably just make him stronger. But I was with him on this where I was like, oh, wait, what's happening here? And like, he ended up then going back and like taking a beat and being like, oh, it was a great team performance. But then he like almost couldn't help himself afterwards because he was like, I have to say, amazing goal. And I was like, okay, that's awesome. So I think we should all kind of bring that energy to work where it's like, I have to say, amazing performance so far by me on extra time. I plan to continue on.
I'm not gonna be a starter. It's so perfect that he plays for a team called the Galaxy. So when he says, you know, if he had said, I'm the future of the Dynamo, it would sound like cocky, but he literally said, I'm the future of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
That's Zlatan level stuff right there.
It did sound like shades of Zlatan, like he'd been watching YouTubes. But just 22 years old, I believe still. So we're going to talk about that one a little bit later, I think.
But he turns 23 in a month. So 22 okay. turning 23. Mm-hmm. You always want to make sure you get in there. We'll talk a little bit about his stats. He is starting to enter some Zlatan categories. Michael, for you, let's close this out just here. Best thing you saw.
To piggyback off of that, I think within the league, we should all have Jovalich Day to bring the hype. And I'm going to bring my Jovalich Day, my Jovalich self, to the show for this. MLS Hype Train, this is why I love the league. Competition. 12 games where you have a winner. Within those 12 games, 7 games decided by one goal. That is the essence of competition. That's the essence of MLS soccer. And I think it typifies the part of the season that we're in. It was grind time from the international break and really the end of May to about the end of July. And now you start to see the pressure ratchet up and we're on the cusp of some major matchups and some major, major playoff implications.
It is very telling that all of the games that weren't one goals are the ones that stand out where you're like, oh my God, how could a team possibly score this many or, you know, beat a team by this many, which takes us into our biggest story of the weekend, which of course was TFC's 4-0 win at home against Charlotte FC as Bernadeschi and Insigne both made their debuts. They started. Bernadeschi, goal and an assist. Insigne, assist. They were able to score 4 in the first half, which meant they got to sub out at halftime and then watch the second half as fans and enjoy it. Michael Bradley, back in the locker room, speaking Italian, living his Roma days once again, Verona days. He's making runs out of midfield. He's chipping goalkeepers. He's laughing into his celebrations. It was Michael Bradley 101 back into his peak. Kalen, let's start with you. Watching this game, seeing Bernadeschi and Insigne on the field finally after all this buildup, what was sort of your initial reactions?
I mean, it looked like a different team. It looked like a completely different team. And I think some of it you were expecting to some degree, but for all of the pieces to click this quickly was pretty incredible to see. And, you know, I thought Insigne was great. Bernadeschi, you saw the quality, the way he just absolutely smoked that one. Just so pure on the technique. And then, yeah, Michael Bradley, you mentioned it, 2 goals. Look to really turn back the clock. And sometimes I think, Lahoud, maybe you can relate to this, but when you have big time players come into a team, I think it can kind of lift the players around, even some of the better players, I think, Bradley probably is, you know, I think he speaks Italian, so he's able to connect with them. With his history in Roma, they'll have known him from his playing days over there. And I think you can see a little bit of a way that it can rejuvenate you, and you want to sort of prove, I guess, to the other players, but more to the new guys that, like, you can build a relationship. And that little pass behind the leg from Insigne to Bradley was just silky. It was just disgusting. Yeah. And they were just connecting all over the pitch. So I really liked that. I would say the undercover signing amongst all the big names that stood out to me is actually Marc-Anthony Kay. That one kind of flew under the radar because it didn't have the like fanfare at the airport and all that. But I mean, for a Canadian international to show up, and I think with his story too, where he was in LAFC playing his best and then kind of didn't really click for him in Colorado. And now he's come back to Toronto where he's from, but they didn't really have use for him or really rate him when he was a younger player. Then, of course, Bob Bradley, who he's now returning to play for, brings him back in a World Cup year. And he's a big, big part of that. And I thought even just in this game, there were just a couple of moments where he's able to, you know, really control the tempo of the match. He's able to find the right passes, connect the dots. And then also what it did for Michael was allowed him to be a little bit more free to move forward and understand that he was going to be behind him in support. So it looked really good for week one with this group, and so good that like by halftime they got Bernardeschi and Insigne out. I think by like the 75th minute I saw Insigne like fully showered, dry, dripping in jewels, with like an OVO like Drake hoodie on the sideline, just like posted up chilling watching the second half, which kind of speaks to what happened to Charlotte on the day. I think they got 3 yellow cards on the bench in this one, which I don't know if that's a record or
well, Kaylin, that. You know, he had to get but, to family yeah. dinner. And Insigne was like, if we're going to win by this much this quickly, I got red sauce coming out. I got to go meet up. They had fun. It looked like fun. Michael, what'd you make of seeing them for the first time?
It's the first time in a while I've seen them look fluid. And it reminded me of the fluid type of soccer we saw back in 2017 and 2016 during that golden era of TFC. And Michael Bradley, he looked rejuvenated because there's freedom. And Kaylin, you talked about when new players come in, high level players, they come into a team, they come into a locker room, and now it takes off the responsibility and pressure that Michael Bradley was under to deliver for this TFC team. Look at some of the players that have come and gone since he's been there. Josie Altidore, gone. Giovinco, gone. Vasquez, gone. And Michael Bradley was with a young team that was expected to deliver. And really that pressure of, hey, hold down the fort until these guys come. It's a lot to bear for a veteran player. But now that you have quality around you, it allows you to take chances, to play with a smile on your face. And of all the smiles on the faces, the one that caught my eye the most was Bob Bradley. How many times do we see Bob actually smile? It was a full cheek to cheek smile. So I want to, that might be.
It was like a grin, but
that was. It was a smirk. That's full cheek quality from Bob. that's as good as it gets. Yeah, we've all been around. That's as good as it gets from Bob on that fourth goal. Just little half smirk towards the camera, towards the fans. And there's a feel-good factor about this TFC team and the atmosphere in that stadium. It was electric. Everyone's standing up for 90 minutes. What I loved about how they lined up tactically, when you get DP, sometimes it takes them a couple games to get into it. But the fact that Insigne and Bernardeschi, he's going to adapt. He's already adapting well. But the onus he took, getting wide, coming inside, they overloaded that Charlotte midfield. Charlotte lined up in a 4-4-2. And when I've been in that position where when you're one of the two defensive midfielders, it's like you're chasing shadows when teams have 3, 4, 5 talented players around you. And it was 90 minutes of pandemonium.
It was a lot of fun to watch. As you said, the energy palpable through the television from home. So both of you impressed, both of you, I think, saying it felt like the old days a bit, not just for Michael Bradley, but for the whole team. In the old days, they'd go to the playoffs and they'd go to finals. They are currently 13th in the East. They are only 6 points back of 7th place in FC Cincinnati, but there are 6 teams between them to get there. So do either of you feel that from what you saw already and what you expect that this is going to be a playoff team?
It's definitely doable. It is a tall task because they have dug themselves quite a hole. But as you just mentioned, though, the gap between 5th and 12th, which is just one place above them in the East, is literally 6 points between 5th and 12th. And they're 2 points out of 12th right now. So the whole Eastern Conference is still wide open for me, up for grabs, except for maybe those top 4 places that you feel are going to be playoff teams. So that definitely speaks well for them. I mean, I imagine if you were to be an Italian Serie A fan for some reason, you just turned on your first match and you watched TFC play and you're like, wait, this team is at the bottom of the table? Like, yeah. How good is this league? But I think, you know, a big part of it is that the other piece that I like around these signings as well is, and I think maybe this was partly around why, you know, I think Bob will have a measured take around this, but I think why he might be silently smiling is I think some of the young players that they gave a ton of minutes to that Lahoud was mentioning earlier are going to be put in a better position at this point. We saw Jaden Nelson come in the second half, DeAndre Kerr, Shaquille Marshall-Reddy. Like, they have a ton of young players that they had to play in more meaningful roles to this point in the season, who will now be able to kind of play within the side. Akinola is another one, I think, as well, that's going to be able to contribute. Mm. So I think you're starting to see the pieces come together here. It's just one match. But if you look towards just this week, you know, they might qualify for CONCACAF Champions League this week. Mm. And then if they get into the playoffs, this is not going to be a team that people are going to want to see as a, you know, 6 seed or 5 seed or whatever they end up getting to. So I think that it's kind of like the world can shift pretty quickly in MLS, and especially if you go out and spend, I don't know, 30, 10, 20, 30, whatever they spent to make it happen. But I wouldn't have expected to at all click this much. It's just week one, but I feel like within a week they could get a lot of, make a lot of ground back.
Well, one of the things that excites me about this group and this team is you look at the schedule, you look at the road ahead. Prior to this moment, they had played a lot of the toughest opponents around the league and the toughest opponents they're going to face for the majority of the year. They still have to play Philadelphia Union. They have Nashville and Portland in the next couple weeks. But after that, they're playing against direct opponents. When I was part of teams where the season wasn't going your way, I remember in Philadelphia, Jim Curtin used to always say this, where he said, hey, 6-point swings coming our way. And those are the type of games that you want on your schedule when you get reinforcements like this. And when you beat direct opponents, you just keep climbing up the ladder. And I could see this team kind of being like a Portland Timbers of last year, where they made that second half of the season surge. And before they knew it, because they took care of their business, everyone else fell by the wayside. They found themselves hosting a home playoff game. I wouldn't be surprised if something miraculous like that happened for this TFC group.
Yeah, you're right in terms of the ability to control your own destiny, as well as every week we come on and this is the new team that's hot and they're riding the standings. And then a week later, they're forgotten. It's a new team. It has been so up and down across all of the teams this year that if they can find some consistency, then they can probably be the one that outlasts. As Kalen mentioned, chance to go to CCL, Canadian Championship Final, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday night. We will preview that along with the Vancouver Whitecaps, of course, coming up later in the show. They did sign Daniil Henry to close out last week. He was released by LAFC because they have a roster crunch going on. He trained a bit with TFC, played the second 45 minutes. It's a guy who's on the Canadian national team currently, still in his prime. And that's just a free pickup that they were able to make and a local guy. So that's pretty exciting for them. I've got a take coming out of this game, even though his goal was waved off. I'm going to say Jesus Jimenez, 8 goals already this year. Now Bernadeschi and Insigne around him. My golden boot pick right now, as of today. I think the guy's going to score a zillion goals as these guys set up for him. We'll see. I don't know. But when they put him through on that goal and he beats the defender and then chips the goalkeeper, even though it got called off, you're like, oh, yeah, right. When there was people around him to link up with, like Pasuelo early in the year, he scored 8 goals, and now he's got a lot of pieces around him. It's going to be fun to watch. We talked about turning back the clock. We are officially back in 2017. Steve sends us an email, and he says, with his brilliant performance on Saturday and the USMNT midfield continuing to putter along, yeah, you know where I'm going, how likely is it that Michael Bradley is a part of the squad in Qatar? Thanks for all your great work. I present it to you.
I'm just going to tackle this highly unlikely. Tyler Adams has locked down that defensive midfield position, and it's time for a new generation to step up. I mean, he would have to go and score goals like he's doing for the remainder of the season, not just have solid performances, but to be chipping in with goals and assists. And I think his sole focal point should be TFC, and there's enough there to deal with in that project for the second half of the season. But I'm not really sure that having him back is the answer.
Come on, guys. Let's get to Marcus back on the roster. Let's get Josie back on. Let's get Michael on. Omar's still at the Revs. There's a chance we could do this. Steve, we'll forward your email to Greg Berhalter just in case he didn't notice. And we'll make sure to keep pushing the storyline as we go along. Reminder, there was a team on the other side. Tough loss for Charlotte FC. They've only won ever won one game on the road in Major League Soccer. This was always going to be a bit of an uphill battle for them, a big loss for them, back-to-back losses in MLS, surrounded by them winning UEFA Champions League against Chelsea in the middle of the week at home. Let's talk some other big matches from this weekend. And we're going to start, of course, with the New York Red Bulls 2. The Baby Bulls taking over an MLS play, Open Cup midweek. Gerhard Struber rotates. He starts Serge Gomez, John Tolkien, Daniel Edelman, Caden Clark, all the young players getting an opportunity to get on the field, and a big win for New York down at Q2 Stadium in a wild game. Michael, is there anything you'd like to tell us about this game?
Do you have a power? Can we put the bring down the PowerPoint slides? I wanted to make a PowerPoint slide because it was a lesson in pressing and how to press in a variety of ways. It is the Gerhard Struber way, the Gerhard Struber era of New York Red Bull that was on full display from minute zero to minute 70, because Austin FC started pushing and getting back in the game. The player that I was most impressed with, two of them, Serge Gomez, this kid is going to be a talent. He has all the physical tools. Should he be able to take care of his body in the long term and learn how to be a pro? But the audacity to go 1v1, how hard he presses, and then he had a lot of power on that shot. But from a New York Red Bull perspective, this was a statement win for them. And Struber said that he was going to come in to Q2 Stadium with his team and look to make a statement to get them going on the league standpoint again. And also with an Open Cup matchup, they took a big risk by rotating a bunch of players. Aaron Long even came off at halftime. Mm-hmm. The player that I really want to give kudos to, you know I'm biased with my Demon Deacons, Omer Fernandez, your boy, my guy, in the black and gold. I thought he was the best player on the field for the first 70 minutes, and then Sebastian Driussi took over. He just has an engine about him. His ability to play the final pass, win second balls, beat players on the dribble, he's going to have a very bright future in Major League Soccer, and I think a very bright future for the New York Red Bull.
Michael, it's been a great stretch for Austin, right? They won Copa Tejas, first in the West for large segments over the last few weeks. They've won games on the road. Was there anything that you took away from this game, though, that makes you worry bigger picture?
I think the fact that Austin FC, the track record in the last, for 2022, or nearly the last 2 months, has been falling behind early or giving up goals and then having to come back and grind out a result. As a player, that wears on you mentally and emotionally, and also gives you confidence to not panic. This is a group that is together, and that has been their biggest strength, with some of the off-field stuff going on at different times. They've actually been brought closer together, different players stepping up at the right time. Last night, I saw a team that was just second best for a majority of the game, that were late to second balls, that were out-hustled, out-dueled. That has not been the Austin FC way. It's actually been the opposite, being a character group. And it was a trap game, I think. When you look at the New York Red Bulls team and you don't see Luquinhas, you don't see Lewis Morgan, you don't see some of their more high-profile names that have brought them success, it's easy to rest on your laurels and get comfortable. And I thought that they were surprised that Red Bull sat in the mid-block versus going full high pressure, and it disrupted them. Red Bull and Drew Yearwood was excellent. He just manhandled the midfield and dominated while he was in, and I think him leaving the field opened up spaces for Sebastian Driussi. And on that note, Sebastian Driussi, what is the good point for Austin FC is they have a guy who is rightfully so an MVP candidate, and he showed that last night. Without him, I don't think they get back in the game whatsoever. Individual moments of brilliance was the difference between that game being a close game and that game being a potential blowout. But you have Sebastian Driussi, you're in every game, so that's going to bode well for them eventually.
You can see on the long shot, you know, he's still pretty far out. Red Bulls are panicked once he beats his first defender, because everyone knows what can come, and then he still hits it, and he hits it perfectly. It was a gorgeous goal. Great comeback, exciting game, a lot of fun in that one. We'll talk a little more Red Bulls as we get into that Open Cup game, but a 4-3 win for them down in Texas, which is something that Kalen would like to talk about.
No, I will say I'm a little bit more disappointed in Austin, because I felt like they got back into the match. Driussi, I mean, it was just an insane goal right before halftime where he's like going backwards and is able to, like, I would be like, oh, try to bring it down, man. And he just like just smacks the thing. But I just think, like, for me, you know what you're going to get if you're playing the Red Bull. And the way they play, yeah, and I think you could look, and I looked at the team sheet, same thing before the game, and I was like, oh, wow, no Luquinhos here. This doesn't look like the same, you know, roster. It looks like they're resting some guys and rotating some guys, where it looked like it was, outside of Stuver, you know, the full lineup. And it just looked like, you know, whether it was from the long throw chances, like, you know what Red Bull is going to bring. And for me, it just looked a little bit naive from Austin to continue to play out of the back. I mean, some uncharacteristic mistakes. Fagundes, who's one of the more technical players, makes a little bit of an error where he plays it back and goes directly the other direction. And then, you know, they get the save, and then Nick Lima tries to keep the ball and play it over to Felipe, who generally senses the danger always. But in this case, you know, you have to know that on every single play, Red Bull's going to be hunting that down. Yearwood makes a great play and a great finish. But then after they get back in the game, and then after halftime, there's the ball where Ring has it and drops between the center backs and tries to split a ball right through the middle when you have your outside backs split wide, and it comes right back down. Harper makes a really nice little cut and move to finish that one off. But it just looked like there's a difference between, I talked about this a little bit with Charlie Davies last night, was like, there's a difference between playing, sticking to your philosophy. And we celebrate teams for doing that all the time here, especially. But also, at a certain point, you have to understand how the game is going. And they were already in a hole. They saw what Red Bull was going to do. I can live with the Barlow goal, right, where it's like the ball bounces and they do a good job of getting to second balls. And that's kind of what Red Bull is going to do to you. But some of the mistakes that Austin sort of walked into, to me, felt a little bit naive, or inability to kind of change the system or the tactics against the opponent. So I felt a little disappointed. But you also see with Drewsy, you're never out of it. They pushed the game quite well to kind of make it a fun one to watch. But I would say disappointing if you're going to be looking for trying to win the supporter shield. Those are some of the matches where you're saying you got to get 3 points at home, or you got to at least not put yourself in a hole that you have to try and really put a lot of effort in to climb out of.
I think what gives me, on the positive side for this group, what gives me, you know, more positivity looking at the next couple of games is they go up against a SKC team that has a big game that we're going to talk about in more depth before they play them. Is the depth for Austin FC? You have Washington Caruso coming off the bench, and he announces himself to Major League Soccer, goes for the audacious bicycle kick at the far post, and it turns into what could be the assist of the year, unintentional assist of the year, where it hits off his shin, and it falls right to Ethan Finley. So hopefully that's an omen for success for things he's intending to do, and it results in that third goal. But when you talk about the having a plan B, they do have a couple options off the bench. Moussa Djite, the battering ram, we call him the Moose, Le Moose in French, Senegalese striker, a guy that they were waiting for most of last year. He comes in the second time they've been at home, and he changes the game alongside Sebastian Driussi. He allows them to have that plan B of verticality, which is something that Maxi Ruti offers with running off the ball, but he allows verticality because he's just brute force. He's going to hold it up. He's going to be just bringing strength to a Red Bull back line that was about dueling. The Red Bull back line, they lead the league in duels won and aerial duels won. So having Maxi Ruti as your league striker, it plays into their hand because that's not Maxi's game per se. Maxi's been very good for Austin FC this season. But in that game, I think maybe Moussa Djite could have offered something different. Maybe Danny Huson could have offered something different. But I'm excited to see Washington Caruso and how he impacts this team. They've been doing all this and getting points without really having a third DP and having a winger. Ethan Finley has been filling in. Owen Wolf has got the majority of the starts, and he's a center midfielder. So now Caruso coming in and hopefully some other reinforcements creates a little bit more balance and gives plan C or plan B as options for Austin when they get in the pickle.
Friday, I believe they announced mutually terminating contract with Cecilio Dominguez, which means they now have a third DP spot to go out and sign another player. We've obviously heard the rumors around Rigoni potentially being that piece for Austin FC. But big win for the Red Bulls. Let's look at a couple other big games from this weekend and a big performance. Gareth Bale off the bench gets his first goal in Major League Soccer. Chiellini, another start, goes 45 minutes. And Chicho Arango gets the goal. But I think, Kalen, the big storyline, we're all watching every breath, every time Gareth Bale puts his hair back, every time he talks to someone, who's he friends with, what's he doing? How do you feel on your Gareth Bale rankings right now?
I'm actually pretty high. I'm not gonna tamper this one down. This felt more like a preview than like a, you know, realization of anything. I think he's gonna be able to do a lot more in MLS. So he's played two matches for like 20 minutes off the bench. And even in this one, you know, he scores the goal, which I thought he took really well, the quick trigger just to kind of get that quick release before the goalkeeper gets set. But he also gotten behind, and the second one had that, you know, chip that I think Andrew Wiebe had a funny tweet about around
which don't golf do that. No, 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 he's not here. We don't talk, time. We don't say Wiebe the G time. Word on this show.
Yeah, you knew that was coming. But yeah, I mean, just creating chances, and you can see how in open space he can be a problem. But I actually think Arango for me was the big takeaway for his performance. And you know, he's received some criticism. I think even Cherundolo came out and asked more from him about his work rate, and there's been rumors to talk about, is he going to be leaving or is he not? Are they going to be potentially moving him on, which is crazy because this guy can't stop scoring. And for all the idea that he doesn't fit into the system in a way, or he doesn't have the mobility or anything, he just played 90 minutes in the heat in Kansas City and scored a banger in the first half. And he just continues to score goals. So for me, it's like, we saw the ball where he can get in behind a couple weeks ago that Vela plays him behind. This time he gets on the half turn late, creates the chance for Bale, recognizes, oh, I have a guy who's won 5 Champions League one-on-one out on the outside. Let me try and just turn, spin, and find him in space. So it's not always necessarily him having to be the one to stretch the field and get him behind, but you can see even there he can facilitate. They talk about they have this other DP slot that they could go out and get a number 9. Every week I watch him, he looks like a DP number 9. And I understand you have to sort of guess like who the roster delineations and demarcations in LAFC's roster, like throw it out the window. Because who's a DP, who's TAM, it doesn't matter. Like the quality and the depth on this team is just insane. So I think Arango had one of the like low-key performances of the weekend for me. And, you know, if you're... I can't imagine that they're going to think to move him on because he's too important right now. If they really want to make a run at this, I'm like, no, 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 no. Like in the past, number 9 and goalkeeper for me for LAFC were the two places that were holding them back. And now you're like, you've got this. Like, just don't break this because you've pushed all your chips in to try to win it all. And, you know, I think Arango is going to play a big part in that.
Let's look at just pure numbers a bit. This guy has scored 7 goals in what, the last 9 games. That if that's not DP level, I don't know what is. That is a freak of nature for a guy that started the season slow and has really found form. And then you bring in superstars of Gareth Bale. You bring in international stars like Chiellini. Hey, you and I have both been in locker rooms, Kalen, where I remember Zach Thornton used to say this. Former teammate of mine used to say this. Kid, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And Chicho Arango, he is a well-oiled machine. What I like about him is just his awareness in the final third, his awareness of how to impact the game, and just the different ways he can score a goal. He's decent in the air. He's calm, cool, and collected. He can score ugly goals. He can score golazos. And he brings other players into the fold. You saw it on the Gareth Bale goal. And that is a massive asset for an LAFC team that has skill players who underneath him, and really he's a player that thrives off service, and your skill players, they need space. So that's a big gap to fill for a player who fits every single profile in what's needed to succeed in Major League Soccer.
It's going to be fascinating to see what LAFC does. I think you're both right, but they have the spot. Can they improve their roster? And then, as you say, Michael, do they break it by trying to improve it at the same time? It does feel like it's win now. 2022, They're trying to get it done. Gareth Bale gets his first goal. Chiellini back-to-back starts now. This was always going to be a straightforward one for them. Sporting KC, their biggest game of the week is on Wednesday night. It was not on Saturday night, and that was always going to be their focus in a year that they are struggling in the standings. We'll talk more about that coming up. Let's move across LA. LA Galaxy, 2-0 win over Atlanta United. It breaks a three-game losing streak for the LA Galaxy for the week, vaults them back into a playoff spot. We saw Gaston Brugman get his debut in midfield, sort of a two-man midfield alongside Mark Delgado with Revelison shifted up in front of them, which is what we had heard was the idea as they brought him in. And who else? But as Kalen said, Dejan Jelavic, he gets the goal. He gets the second goal off the bench in this one as a sub. And it brings us back now. Brugman is in the team, locked in. Do you have to see Jovalich and Chicharito start together when Galaxy are healthy for the rest of the season?
I'm going to leave this one for you to go first, Kalex. I see that. I see you biting your lip. That's my tell that you got a hot take.
No, I mean, look, he's making a case, right? But at the same time, you look at the performances that he's had. I think he's scored in the last four substitute appearances, scored six straight home games, nine goals in 600 minutes, two assists.
To be clear, you just called Chicho Arango a DP for similar numbers, so just watch what you do, Kalen.
That's fair. I don't think Jovalich would be shy to go in and ask for that either, judging by his post-game comments. But I'll also at the same time, sometimes, what did Lahoud just say? If it ain't broke, don't fix it?
Yeah.
I mean, so if you look at it, his impact off the bench, clearly that seems to be working. I think they can potentially try this out. And I know, you know, there's been calls for him to, for Vanny to go to a 3-5-2. You know, the question that I have around moving to that formation a little bit is in the chance creation. And right now, if you go into the expected goals, which I'm careful to wade into sometimes, but LA Galaxy is near the top. I think top two or top four, depending on which list you're looking at in expected goals. They are also amongst the top two to four in MLS teams underperforming their expected goals. So that's where you could both make the case against him in a sense, because they're creating opportunities, and for him, on the other hand, where you'd say this is a finisher. My question more is to look at it and say, if you play him with Chicharito, we've seen it in moments. And I think of those two goals, I think at least one of them was that beautiful back heel, sort of like flick on to Chicharito, which to me was his best case. His connection to Chicharito, it's not so much the goals for me. It's what does he do for Chicharito? This is his best way on the pitch. Mm. I've been a striker in this position. And if you want to play, who's the main guy, right? And some of it comes with a little bit of recognition of that. And maybe I lacked some of the things that Jovalich has as far as his other mentality. But as far as getting on the pitch, proving that you can be a facilitator at times can help you earn minutes in ways that sometimes goals can't even. And I think that's kind of what he's running into. As far as chance creation goes, a lot of it's come through Grandsir, Cabral, and then in this last game, Douglas Costa, right? And Efra at times, but none of them have been consistent enough to say you have to keep their place in pen on the pitch. But I do worry if you go to a 3-5-2, you're now sort of pushing that responsibility over to your wingbacks, which would either be Gasper, Raheem Edwards, and Julian Araujo. And I'm not sure that that's where they're going to be able to create, or you're pushing it onto the strikers. And Chicharito has never been a player for me that I want to see involved in the buildup. Jovalich has a little more to his game, but still I think belongs in the box is where you want to see him do his damage. So instead, Vanny's gone with a little bit of a different system. Brugman coming in, I think, helps. It also helps where Revelison has been able to move forward. He actually lines up at sometimes like a second striker where he makes runs off of Chicharito, which is kind of a unique way of applying the system, but it's not perfect either at the same time. So I would say I would not expect to see them go to the 3-5-2. I think there are some challenges related to it, and I think in the interim time they've kind of pushed their chips in to say we're going to hope that Cabral and Grandsir are going to create enough chances enough that Chicharito is going to be able to pick up the scraps. But I think if I were Jovalić, my case would be more about what I can do for Chicharito than what I could do myself to get onto the pitch.
I think this is a team that, has to figure out if they want to play the beautiful game or if they want to do whatever it takes to get results. And in Major League Soccer, if you're going to try and complete a ton of passes, there has to be an end result. And I don't think they've had the right balance between Revelles and Mark Delgado, who are two very good players, effective players when they're put in the right spot. Last season, we saw Revelles try to be forced to be a number six. I mean, he's a box-to-box midfielder. And I love what you said about him playing as a second striker. We've seen that, him having an impact in the El Tráfico game. I thought he was very impactful as he grew into the game. LA Galaxy started growing into the game, and the power, the pace, the directness which he brings to the midfield, that's different, that's unique from anyone else they have in the middle of the park. And now with Bergman, you have someone who's likened to the Uruguayan Pirlo, which is always a big statement. Hopefully that means he's going to age like fine wine in Major League Soccer, but you don't have two center backs that can really...
In MLS, I don't know. I think Pirlo
That's why I said in Major League Soccer.
He got a little cork in the bottle once he got here. So yeah.
Unlike Pirlo. Yeah.
But he defends pieces better, yeah.
Yeah. But I think if we're going to talk about whether they're going to build up or hold up the ball or who's going to do all that, you have to go a few lines back of what's going to happen when they get the ball to center backs. Who are the center backs going to get the ball to? I think the likes of Koulibaly, Williams, playing out of the back is not really their biggest strength. And we've seen that in big games where they've gotten in trouble, where the game against LAFC, they had the game there. And then you saw Koulibaly start getting out of position, start being erratic in possession. And that's when gaps open up. And star strikers like Arango and other players around the league will punish you when you do that. When you have more of a ball-playing midfielder in the middle of the park, now it opens up space for other talented players and for runners like Chicharito Hernandez. He needs service from out wide and also through the middle, and he hasn't been getting it.
It reminds me the way you guys talked about Revelson, and I agree with you. I love when he floats in the box, pulls center backs around. He's basically the Madagascan DeMar Krylock. I think that's what we can just go with from now on. It'll be interesting. You guys did mention two center backs who aren't very good. Who's the third center back? Like, is that not the issue with the 3-5-2 is who's worth putting out there? But then, Kalen, you say if it's not broke, don't fix it. And this is a team that just lost three straight games and is seventh in the West. So it is broken overall as an entity. Maybe the left mirror, which is Jovalić, works. But maybe the rest of the car is not running properly. So there might be a little bit to fix as you put the whole thing together.
I didn't say it was perfect. I said I think Vanny's stuck in between two imperfect choices here. I don't think either. Mm. I think one, if you make the choice to play Jovalić, I think it just creates different problems with, yes, what do you do with the three center back situation as well as the chance creation? How does that happen? Whereas when you stay with these wingers that, you know, can both kind of have a really great moment or then also have a moment that's, you know, it's just inconsistent. That can also be a problem. So yeah, I think it ultimately comes down for me to what happens, what serves best for Chicharito. Cause I still think that's their best path towards being a playoff team, right now. And that said, as I'm saying that, he scored 17 goals last year and they didn't make the playoffs.
So. Well, I'm glad you mentioned Chicharito because there's only so much you can do for a striker that has been misfiring as of late. You can pin it on service he's getting. You can pin it on, is there chemistry? But let's just call a spade a spade. Chicharito Hernandez, it's not for lack of chance creation. It's for lack of execution. It showed on the first goal that was scored. His movement off the ball is still world class, first class. his ability to check away, draw a defender away, and come back into the space. I mean, we see that at the highest level. Cristiano Ronaldo does that type of movement. So he's a lethal striker, but what hasn't been there in ways that it was there more so last season that's needed for this LA Galaxy team if they're going to solidify their playoff place and be the team that I think all of us are waiting to see if they can be, is your talismanic striker needs to finish. On that first goal, the Atlanta United goal, he's been shooting it right at the goalkeeper. And once again, he tries to slot it, and it's like almost like he's trying so hard to get back into goal-scoring form. And, Kalen, you know this as a striker. When you're trying so hard, that's when you miss. And when you're really letting the game come to you, that's when the balls seem to find their way in the back of the net. Luckily, Cabral was there, but I think the real thing in attack, as we talk about the buildup and whatnot, you still have to get more productivity from Hernandez.
It's going to be interesting for the Galaxy down the stretch. It's been interesting for Atlanta United as well, by the way. Losers once again here. Almada, Joseph Martinez on the bench. Has not really been a consistent group that's been able to get out there and get results. Remember, Almada assist in their 2-1 win against RSL a week ago. But now, again, another loss for Atlanta United after struggling in rivalry week against Orlando City as they still try and find their feet. Some players coming back from injury, but it feels like there's more than just that going on. RSL, a 1-0 loss at home to FC Dallas. FC Dallas breaking a 7-game winless streak in MLS. And remember, in 4 of those 7, they led and gave up goals to tie in the 75th minute and on. But they're able to hang on this time. The exact opposite. Jesus Ferreira gets the early goal. Paxton Pomykal with the assist after we got a question, I think, on Thursday that was like, why is no one talking about Paxton Pomykal? Boom, you are welcome. ETR gifting you that. But it was great to see for Paxton, and I think huge to see, Michael, for FC Dallas, that they showed they could hang on to a goal, hang on, you know, to a big moment from Jesus Ferreira and get 3 points. Really tough at RSL. They were one of only 2 teams in the league with Philly that hadn't lost a game at home yet this season. I think this was a proving point for FC Dallas this weekend.
This win and the result came at a crucial time for them, because when you go on a run like that, where, as I said before, it's not like they're not creating chances. When they played Austin FC, they had golden opportunities, but it's not putting teams away that have really hurt them. Getting the first goal is one thing, but second goals win games at this point in the season, consecutive goals in particular, to put the knockout blow. They're a team that likes to play vertical, and I think Jesus Ferreira, FC Dallas needed this, but I think Jesus Ferreira really needed this, because I'm going to go back to one of my favorite movies. Have you guys ever seen Major League? We've all seen Major League, right?
Of course.
So you guys remember when the pitcher tries to throw it and he's just like cocking his arm? We have a term for that. The yips. In the last 3 or 4 games, Jesus Ferreira has had the yips in front of goal because he wasn't shooting. And the NYCFC game, he did it against Austin FC, passing in front of goal. That's unlike the savagery we've seen from Jesus Ferreira. And a good Jesus Ferreira has shown to be a very good FC Dallas team. You get Ferreira going, you know who else gets going? Paul Arriola, because Ferreira has been at the heart of majority of Arriola's assists. And those two are the offensive production for this FC Dallas team.
It is a big moment. As you said, Ferreira gets the goal, Pomykal gets the assist, they hang on to the shutout. Everything FC Dallas was looking to do all in one. They now sit only 1 point behind RSL in 5th place in the Western Conference, RSL in 4th on 33 points. In watching this game, I thought Jefferson Savarino was fantastic again. He's been a big signing. I do wonder, we've talked a few times around the Alejandro Pozuelo trade. We've talked Chicho Arango as well, Jesse's artist originally. Some big trades in MLS for DPs, DP-level players. We've never mentioned RSL. I think part of that is Bobby Wood started the year really strong. Rubio Rubin's a big signing. But they've lost Demir Krylak, and they haven't replaced him. Savarino should only have ever been an addition to what they had, and they haven't replaced his production. And I don't think we've seen the big upgrade that we've expected from the new ownership group already. They've been successful, but I would like to see it now. Help this team that's sort of scrapped and clawed to stay up towards the top of the Western Conference. Bring them that little bit of support if you can, and sort of shift to the new era of RSL. We have not put any pressure on them, I think, because they've done such a good job. But now I think you start to look at some of the holes and the inability to consistently score goals, especially against opponents that are sitting deep on them. So that one, a 1-0, big loss for, or big win for FC Dallas on the road. Let's go to NYCFC. We see them win 2-0. Eber gets the goal. And then just a few minutes ago, Tom Berger tweeting it out to make it official, and NYCFC putting it out as well, that Tati is headed to Girona on loan through next summer. So for the full European season, that means his time in MLS probably done. His time with NYCFC probably done. Of course, we've done it for the last three shows in a row, but you remember 2021 Golden Boot winner, MLS Cup champion, 50 goals, 20 assists in MLS, including 32 goals and 10 assists in his last 49 appearances. I will point out, this is a loan and not a purchase. When Jack Harrison went to CFG and then got sent on loan to, I believe it was Middlesbrough, he was purchased from MLS. So that will change the amount of assets that NYCFC has to work with now in attempting to replace Tati. Michael, how does that affect your thinking? Does that worry you in any way for NYCFC?
I don't think it worries me as much as other people might be worried whenever you lose the leading goal scorer in Major League Soccer for the last two seasons and the season's still going. Because look at the players that are stepping up while he's been there. You see Santi Rodriguez, who I thought was a player that was instrumental in their MLS Cup run, a player that didn't get enough recognition during that time. He's really stepped up. Playmaker alongside Maxi Morales, who seems to be in good health now and continuing to deliver. The last game, Maxi Morales looked like the Maxi Morales before he came to Major League Soccer in his first couple seasons, scoring goals. I mean, just making that third man run in beyond the striker. They're going to lose some mobility in Tati Castellanos. He's a special player. He's earned this move to Europe, and good luck to him. Thank you for your service to Major League Soccer. They have a backup striker who's been scoring, who's been in form, and you sleep a little bit better if you're a coach when you have a striker who you know you can depend on a bit. And I tell you what, MLS defenders are going to have the best sleep of their lives knowing that Castellanos is not going to be back for one season.
It is. They are definitely loaded with talent and the potential to replace him. And obviously, as we saw, he had his goal waved off, but they got a 2-0 win without him in this one. Kalen, let's get out the knives, baby. Let's talk Seattle, Colorado. You could go watch Instant Replay presented by Cheez-Its on MLSsoccer.com or the MLS YouTube page, in which Kalen and who, Charlie?
Yep.
Broke down all the biggest calls of the weekend, including in Seattle's 2-1 win against the Rapids. The Sounders went down a man, and they were still able to get over the hump and get the win. But controversy a couple times in this game. Kalen, I'm going to let people go to Instant Replay to see your takes. I think the comment sections are open everywhere. It's at Kalen Carr on Twitter or CA2 on Twitter if they really want to just engage
that's my
you.
That's my Instagram. Come on, man.
Uh-oh, I just got your IG out there.
You can follow both.
Throw the LinkedIn.
Yeah, yeah. Kalen, what's your social security number again, just in case you need to reach you? And I'm sure Sounders fans will have nothing to say, but people can go there to hear what Kalen said. Michael, what's your thoughts on the two calls, the one which was the quickly taken free kick for the Sounders opening goal, and then the second one was the second yellow right at the start of the second half to Kellen Rowe?
I'm going to leave, because I know, Kalen, I know you want this moment. I think as we talk about the knives being sharpened, and I have the butter knives, so I'm going to just take the less dramatic one, the second yellow. I didn't agree with that whatsoever in real time, because I was watching a bit of that game in preparation for our game. In real time, I didn't see anything in that. It wasn't malicious. I don't think he was – I don't understand that. I think it was a refereeing mistake. We know referees make mistakes, but mistakes like that can change games. And fortunately for the Seattle Sounders, it did not cost them. Bigger credit goes to the Seattle Sounders, because I think they actually came alive much more from that adversity moment and started playing with more freedom. Gaps started opening up. Ladero started dropping a bit deeper to get on the ball. And Jordan Morris had a really big game for them in the ways that we know Jordan Morris can in Major League Soccer.
I'll take the other one, and I'll say the ball's taken, what, 35 yards away from where the spot of the foul was. I have no problem with the speed it's taking at. I have no problem with letting them take it quickly if they want. But the complaint there is it's nowhere near the spot of the foul, which means it's not where it's supposed to be taken. Now, I can understand a little bit, and I think this should be a rule, which is like if you take it from further away from the attacking goal, it shouldn't be an issue. But I think the way the rules are set up, it is. That doesn't mean the Rapids weren't in the wrong for complaining and fighting. And I think you could argue that there wasn't really a foul, but it's an innocent foul near midfield. That's what you argued, Kalen.
I agree with that. I don't think it was a foul, but I would just say if I'm playing on the road against, and you've got a Ladero on the team and he's going to play, cause that ball was a dime. I would not switch off at all. And I understand, the ball comes back from a different place or whatever, but my take on it was that you can't switch off. And I thought Colorado switched off in the moment. I understand. I agree. I don't think it was a foul, but still, at least from me being on the pitch, I would either try and block it, get in front of it, or be ready for whatever happens next. Cause, but I also thought, on the other side, there were some problems in with the refereeing in this one. Cause by the letter of the law, what Kellen did, I think it's also a point of emphasis this season to like stop delaying restarts. But come on, like they're going to be, it's 1-1, they're at home. Seattle's not just going to like try and run out the clock.
Classic Kellen Rowe in the 46th minute.
They got
CONCACAF.
45 more to go.
Exactly.
So that was more of have a feel situation for the match, which I think is a part of refereeing, is just really having a sense of what's happening and, maybe give a little bit of a verbal warning there, but you can just yell at me on Twitter, please. Don't just
It's been a tough month or so for the Rapids. Great game for Jordan Morris. Big bounce back game for him to start to see some goals. It'd been three straight with no goals as a team for the Sounders.
Another interesting thing was Roldan played more at a defensive midfield role, which I would expect to see more of. I know it's a little bit tricky because he's in a World Cup year and he's fighting to make the team, but I think it's a good role for him. And it's been a problem spot. I don't think they've been able to find a adequate replacement for João Paulo and then Vargas. So now I think him sliding in there, I think, is something we can expect to see more of. And I don't think it will hurt his chances, really. I think
shouldn't
he's going to be picked.
Strengthen it? Because isn't him being picked is that he's a utility player?
Yeah, but I think he's mostly been used out wide.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I think his value to the team is divided into many different parts. And I think him being able to slot in there and him being a bit of a Swiss Army knife is definitely a positive for the Sounders over the years, but then also for the national team. And then Jordan Morris, for me, this was like, I think we're starting to see him get back to really after an ACL. Like we saw this happen after his last ACL where summer comes and he starts to really push. And he was just too much to handle in this one, was constantly threatening him behind. I love the class little chip finish on the debated, we'll lose that in the course of the debate on instant replay, but the finish was sublime. And I just think in general, I think if you're looking down towards Qatar and you're saying last 15 minutes of a match, even off the bench, who can make a difference and change a game, like that's a guy I would want to see. So I'm excited to see what he can do from here on out.
It's probably so tough for Rich producing you guys because you guys both hate strikers so much, you and Charlie. That it's like so difficult to keep you honest.
Like, look at the goal. Look at the finish.
Columbus 0-0 tie with New England. Cucho's done. He didn't score again. If you don't score every game, you don't count anymore. But Petrovic, phenomenal once again. No Barrero, no Bo, I believe, in this one. But Vroni did make his debut 23 minutes off the bench. I think there's a lot of excitement around him. He seems to really be committed to learning about this league, watching a ton of tape already. We've heard fluent in English, has fit in very well in the locker room. I believe speaks Spanish and Italian fluently as well. So not a bad way to come into an MLS locker room and try and make some friends and get used to things. Minnesota United, 2-1 win over the Houston Dynamo in Houston with no Reynoso. Will Trapp, we know, is out 3 to 5 weeks. They are 6-0-1 in their last seven games. Luis Amarillo came off hurt in this game. There's a lot of talk around who can they sign and what, but they're the hottest team in Major League Soccer, and this was a statement win for them down in Texas to show that they could do it without Reynoso, who has carried them. They are now third in the Western Conference. Guys, when we were talking a month and a half ago, they weren't in the playoffs, which is one proof that, yes, as you guys said earlier, you can get hot and do whatever you want in MLS, but also I think a huge sign for Minnesota that they were able to right the ship this year.
I think it started, go back to when they started getting some life back into their season. It started in Texas in that win against FC Dallas. They went against an FC Dallas team that was red hot up until that moment, and they get the early goal. And when you do that on the road, you do that away from the pressures and the expectations of playing at home, it makes you think, okay, wait a second. Maybe we can actually do this. And they hold on to the win. And in that first half against FC Dallas, they didn't just scrap. They were all over FC Dallas. We know FC Dallas is a second half team predominantly, but they played good soccer. And there was a little bit of stop, start, go. But you have to have your big players deliver when your team needs them most. And Reynoso, we know he can assist, but now he's becoming a goal scoring presence for Minnesota United. If you're still searching for who's going to be your number nine, and Amarillo looks to be that guy this season with Hunu shipped out this summer. If you're still looking for consistency up top, you need your attacking midfielder. You need other players around you to fill that void and create those goals and score those goals. And with Reynoso out, Fragapane steps up again. Last season, he was a revelation for them when he came from Tigres, which seems to be the MLS Argentine soccer factory, where you go to get raw talent and young talent to bring them to Major League Soccer.
It was a big victory for them, big performance for them. Sounds like another under 22 initiative center forward on the way from Colombia, and obviously got the big performance from the South African under 22 initiative player in this one, assist and goal. FC Cincinnati, a 1-1 draw against Nashville SC. Brandon Vasquez scores again. That is a player who should be going to the World Cup. If you want to hear more about that, go listen to the Club and Country special on YouTube that Extra Time did. But before we get to the Canadian Championship and the US Open Cup, I want to mention here, Cincinnati now winless in their last six, but five of those have been draws, Michael, and it feels like we're in a whole different reality. Three of those were without Lucho Acosta, where Cincinnati's disappointed with those results, but they're still in a playoff spot.
Look at who those draws are against. And if you're an FC Cincinnati fan, that should give you a lot of confidence. You're going from being a team that was shipping goals left and right. They say the postman doesn't deliver on Sundays. It delivers on Sundays in Cincinnati in the back of the net for this team in the last couple seasons in the form of goals. You stop the bleeding with the back. This back three, this 3-5-2 system is working. And then you have a target striker who is scoring at will. Things are starting to come together for this Cincinnati team that now is creating belief of, it may not be 3 points, but when you're finding ways to stay competitive and get results on the road or at home against high-profile teams in Major League Soccer, the goals and the wins will come. And Lucho Acosta, he will give a big boost to this team in that attacking midfield role. He's an MVP candidate. This guy, as he goes, FC Cincinnati goes, and it's good to see that Barrial stepping up as an attacking midfielder. He's played out wide typically for this team since last year and second striker at times, but there's depth in that front three that they may have not had in past years.
You mentioned the Minnesota, the Reynoso missing and them still being able to get a result, it does feel like when you look at both Cincinnati and Nashville, if you take out their tens, it's not the same team. So you lose the top end talent with Lucho, the way he makes things click, and Hani on the other side as well. Right. It's just not the same Nashville. So this one didn't quite hit the gear that I was expecting it to. I had sort of circled this one to watch, but it didn't quite tick over in the way that I would have thought. And you understand that. I think if you take most players out, you know, who are that important to the team. But going back to the Minnesota point, that actually looks more impressive as far as what they've been able to do.
DC United losing at home to CF Montreal. Romel Chiodo goal in the opening 40 seconds. So a good win for Montreal. DC now, if you go to Steve Goff's Twitter timeline, putting out tweets that they are connected to two players. One of them, a center forward out of England, and one of them, a defensive midfielder who used to play for New York Red Bulls back in 2012, in Victor Paulsen, an Icelandic international currently at Schalke. It sounds like he's already at Audi Field. So some first big additions potentially coming alongside Ravel Morrison. And the Portland Timbers, a 2-1 win over the San Jose Earthquakes. They are now 7 unbeaten and up to 7th in the West, finally back in the playoff spots. But our final game of the weekend, Vancouver Whitecaps, a 3-1 loss at home to the Chicago Fire. As I said, it was the best thing I saw this weekend. And that takes us to our previews of some huge cup games this week. Tuesday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on One Soccer, Vancouver Whitecaps hosting Toronto FC in the Canadian Championship final. The belief is that they are going to break the record for a capacity for a crowd size in a Canadian Championship final. And have you guys seen the promotions of how they plan on doing it?
No.
You guys not seen this yet?
Nope.
All right. Just get your flight info ready.
I think it's geo-locked, maybe.
Yeah. No, get your flight info ready. You're going to want to fly to Vancouver. So for starters, happy hour, whole first half. 50% off all drinks. Love that. I think Axel Schuster is buying the first 100 fans in the building. A free drink, very much like Andrew Wiebe, a beverage. I think there's free t-shirt giveaway to the first 5,000 fans in the building. This is my favorite one. There's a designated player section. So anyone named Ryan, named Lucas or Luca, or named Andres or Andrea for Lucas Cavallini, Andres Kubas, and of course Ryan Gold, gets a free ticket to sit in this section if they send in their application to Vancouver Whitecaps, and then you're allowed to buy a plus one ticket as a companion. How great is that?
I mean, I'd be do any does Michael count? Do middle names count? Do any of them have the name Michael in there?
Because I jump mean, on. If TFC would maybe back you there, you know, for Bradley. Mm.
Also,
would you change your name, Goss, for a free ticket to a Whitecaps Canadian
That's a great question.
Final?
Probably.
And which name would you take if you had to?
I could see myself
like you
as
could be
a
an
Lucas.
Andreas.
Oh, wow. Lucas, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I could see you as an Andreas.
Okay. I'll take that.
Andreas.
I think I'd cover less ground than Andres Kubas. But same tenacity in the tackle. That's what the two of us have in common. Kaylin, you said you had a friend in Vancouver. Is that person's name any of the five names that I named?
No, it's a Josh. I've been trying to get him to go to.
Well, he's not
going to
go to this one.
Too. Yeah.
Now we got.
Maybe he'll go.
If they acquire Josh Wolf as their new head coach, maybe they'll run a promotion there.
Free beer. He likes beer. Again. He's a beer guy. Okay. I feel like maybe the beer. Have a drink with Jay Demerit or something.
So let's get on the field here for this one. It's a final. It's all to play for. Let's take a look at Toronto because we already spoke about them a ton. How much do you expect to see Bernadeschi and Insigne in this game?
From the start.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
2 days after they made their debut? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think you have to go with them from the start, especially when you see what they were able to do. And it was a perfect game actually against Charlotte because you're able to get them off right away. And you know, I don't know, the plan probably wasn't for them to go more than 60, but I think once you see the score line at halftime, you're like, well we're gonna get an extra 20 minutes out of this one or 15 minutes out of this one. My math there, sorry. yeah, I think they're gonna go from the start. I would expect them to be buzzing, and you know, I think that the way the two teams are coming in the different form, you'd have to say Toronto big favorites even on the road, with the way that they played in this last match and the quality they have, and you know, even some of the experience. So I think, you know, my mind is pointing all towards the direction of TFC in this one. I just think they looked very good. They looked scary good.
But I would say and Michael, feel free to correct me, or Kaylin. Yep. It feels like Vancouver set up well because they like to absorb. They like to sit deep, and then they can be direct, and they have that physicality and athleticism of White and Cavallini against the center backs, which has been TFC's biggest flaw.
I think this game is going to come down to who manages the first half well. If Vancouver, you know, the home crowd is going to bring it because, gosh, you're in all the Ryans, all the Lucas, everyone with a name is going to be in the stadium. I mean, half the city's probably named that. Who knows? But the crowd's going to be there. The atmosphere is going to be there. And it's almost like counterintuitive where, you know, this Vancouver team, when they have that, when they don't give up something early, when they're on the front foot, when they're battling, and really, if they can frustrate this TFC team who came off a game where they were world beaters, mm-hmm. and rightfully so with the talent they had on the team, everything went well. But what happens when everything isn't clicking, when it's only a few days after getting your first win with all your DPs and your stars on the field, and now those legs start going? And the longer the game goes 0-0, that favors the Vancouver Whitecaps. If TFC get an early goal, we've seen it in championship environments when the home team goes down early or goes down in the first half, it creates doubt. And all the Lucas and Ryans and everyone, they're starting thinking about maybe going down to the pub at halftime rather than staying in for the game. I know I would.
The experience gap is the other one to me, too. When you look at Bradley, Kay, Osorio, Insigne, Bernardeschi, even Daniel Henry coming in, Bono, like you look across and you just see how much experience this TFC team has of playing in finals and playing in, you know, knockout rounds and Champions League and all that. So that's the other piece for me that tilts things even further in the TFC side. I'm not throwing it out. Home field, it's going to be an incredible atmosphere, and it's always a rivalry match. You never know what's going to happen, but I just think the experience side is the other piece that I look to as well.
One of the names.
Is that gone?
Michael, shoot.
Oh, I was just going to. But there's the Vanny factor. The Vanny factor, man. I want to see what the XG on the Vanny factor is.
I can't.
I mean, what were his comments in this last one? He had a quote.
He says he finished out the post gamer on the last game against Chicago. Says, if we play like we can play, I'm not scared of Toronto. If we play like tonight, I'm scared of everyone. He basically said they were the worst team in the world on Saturday night after that game, but says he believes in them. One of the names we haven't said yet is Julian Gressel. He made his debut in that game. Obviously not a guy you have to work along because he's in season and he's one of the fittest players in Major League Soccer. So you'd assume he's good to go the full game here in this one. And I really like how he fits into this team. In watching this game with Jevane Brown as the right center back, who is a right back, it gives Gressel complete freedom to find the game wherever he wants, which he didn't have at DC at times because it was so unstable alongside him in the center backs. And then you look at the options he has to set up and cross. He should have had an assist in this game. I think, Kalen, before we got on, you were talking about Crescito and how good he was in that game for TFC. This is now a whole new test of what he has to deal with along that wing, which could be to the advantage of the Whitecaps.
Yeah, no, I think the way that Gressel fits in is going to be really good for this team. I think the question is more defensively. They looked all over the place, and I think even like in the middle, being able to kind of really, especially when we look at how TFC can control the ball in the middle. If it turns into a game where the flanks decide it, I could see that making an argument where with Cavallini in the box and Brian White in the box and you have Gressel service, like those pieces really fit. I think oftentimes the middle of the pitch is probably going to be where things get decided.
It's going to be a fun one, a final. They're always worthwhile. 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on One Soccer, both in Canada and here in the U.S. We will know our first representative in CCL out of Major League Soccer. Of course, the winner will be headed there. Record crowd. The last time the crowd was this big, Vancouver won their only Canadian championship in 2015 in front of 19,000 fans. So they're going to look to do that once again. Let's talk the two Open Cup semifinals we've got coming up Wednesday night. Orlando City hosting New York Red Bull, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+. Plus, a reminder, Orlando top hosting priority for the final. So if they win, Exploria Stadium will be the host of the U.S. Open Cup final for the Red Bulls. They need to win, and then they need to have a Sacramento win in the other game, which we'll get to in just a moment. But Orlando loses again this weekend, a 1-0 loss at home to Philadelphia. Let's start on the Red Bull side, Michael. I think when you look at this matchup, the Red Bulls, 3-0 winners at Exploria Stadium earlier this year, they ran Orlando off the field. The only real big concern I can see from the outside is that this is a Red Bull group that's either really young or foreign imports. Mm-hmm. That maybe the one big worry is that experience factor in a moment like this.
Cup competitions are made for young players. I've always believed in that. I got to experience that when I was with the Philadelphia Union, where we made Open Cup semifinal runs. We made Open Cup final runs, and it was our youngest players that were delivering. It's one and done. It's one game to showcase what you can do. And given the confidence boosting display that the support and cast for the New York Red Bull was able to put out there ahead of this match, given the fact that you were able to rest players, key players who have logged a lot of minutes coming off a disappointing result against NYCFC, an emotional game at home, they're going to be ready for this game. And experience, yes, it matters in these moments, but it's execution. Which team is going to execute when they get their half chance in both boxes? And coming off this last game, you kind of have to tip the momentum towards the New York Red Bull.
Kalen, if you're Orlando, I said it, they got run off the field 3-0 at home. They've struggled over the last four games. What's Oscar Pereja looking for? Sort of what's your game plan to try and get this win?
I think Pereja's sides have been very good in knockout tournaments mm-hmm. in the past. And I think they have been able to be very well organized and disciplined and take less risks, I think. I'd be interested to see what it even looks like in a more defensive posture and seeing if the Red Bulls can really break you down. Even they had 21% of the ball in their last match against Austin over the weekend. I mean, that's low. So maybe even like to see here's the ball. Like, are you comfortable with this? What are you going to do with this? How are you going to break us down? How are you going to create space? How are you going to find space? And then see if you can turn them around, go in the other direction. So I think if you come out and you try and play out of the back against this Red Bull team, you're just going to play into their hands. But I wouldn't expect them to do that in this one. I think you can, you know, they've got Cara, I think, has 7 goals this year. They'll need a big, you know, hold up play as far as if they're going to look to play a little bit more direct at times. I could see Benji Michel being useful as well. Mm-hmm. He, I think, came off the bench in this last one, has been in and out, it looks like, as far as whether he's going to be preferred or not. But I think his sort of ability to stretch the field or really ask questions going the other direction off Cara or connecting with him, I think could help for Orlando. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of depth and energy on Red Bull. We've seen some of the young players and the momentum coming in. They did play one day later than Orlando did, which I believe Struber made some comments about.
No,
was not happy.
Gerhard, but, never.
So that will maybe help. But I feel like for this, like, you know, his hungry pack of wolves, like they'll be fine to be recovered for this one.
So that one, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, Wednesday night on ESPN+, followed up by the other Open Cup semifinal, Sacramento Republic hosting Sporting KC, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN+. Venue Heart Health Park in Sacramento, already sold out for this one. And I ask you both, who is this bigger for? Sporting KC, who are currently sitting last in the Western Conference in MLS, or Sacramento Republic, the lone lower division team left in this competition?
Sporting Kansas City for 500, Alec. And I'll tell you why. Because this season has been an absolute wash, except for one thing and one thing only, the U.S. Open Cup. And when your season's gone down the toilet drain so far, and you have some massive games against top Western Conference opponents, like 3 or 4 days later in a team like Austin FC, this can be the thing that breathes life back in and gives you something else to focus on. It's almost like where Monday is the day you go in the office and you're like, oh man, I just don't want to go to work today. It's just, can we get to Friday? Friday is the Open Cup for the Sporting KC team. MLS play is Monday. They no. Don't want this. Let's just fast forward the Open Cup. I think they're set up to succeed. They've been successful in this tournament. There's familiarity in how to win with a coach who's won this tournament, and he's going to have his team drilled and ready. And I think the fact that this game is against a lower league opponent away from home is going to help them, because all the onus is going to be on Sacramento, but Sacramento is going to feel very confident because they've beaten two MLS teams to get to this point.
Kalen, are you TGI USOC as well?
Any time a USL team is playing against an MLS team, it's bigger for the USL team. Definitely, yeah. even with a disappointing season, and yes, it has been very disappointing for Sporting. Like, this is basically their season at this point, is to try to win the Open Cup, and they have a rich tradition of performing well and winning trophies there. But for Sac Republic, like, this could be huge. I mean, this was a club that was hoping to get into MLS. I think still hold some hope to try to make their way in, but it didn't work out. And then now they're, kind of running through, and they beat the Galaxy. But I just think the level of motivation is going to be through the roof for them. It's always a billion degrees there. The atmosphere at those games is insane. I mean, Sporting Kansas City, it's not cool this time here either.
No.
but I love the dynamic of, like, playing the MLS team playing at the USL venue.
Yeah.
I don't think Sac can host the final.
No,
which is, too bad. But I think I love that dynamic of seeing the lower league getting a chance to go against the bigger, MLS clubs. And I think that's the best part of the Open Cup tournament to me in a lot of ways. Mm. Not rooting against Sporting Kansas City, but I want to see that crowd being celebrated. And I've been to some matches there. It's awesome. So
it's going
to
be fun. It's going to be a special one. It feels like they're set up pretty well to beat SKC the way they play. Seventh right now in the Western Conference for Sacramento. So when we get back to you on Extra Time on Thursday, we will know who is the Canadian champion, and we will know who is hosting and who is playing in the U.S. Open Cup final. It is going to be an incredible week of action. We said the call-up coming up tomorrow with Vanni Sartini. I, of course, will be on MLS Today, previewing the Canadian championship, previewing these Open Cup games, reacting and reviewing to them as well. So feel free to tune into my show every day, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Twitter Spaces, or search MLS Today on any of your podcast apps. With that, thank you all for being here. Thank you to Michael LaHood for the MVP performance off the bench. I felt like Michael Bradley, and he was my Bernadeschi raising my game once again. Kalen, thank you, as always, for being...
Yeah, who am I?
Who am I? Dude, you're Insigne. You just finished with the back heel flick with the Open Cup. Kalen, that's who you are.
You're my Alex Bono, and you always have been, and you always will. As much love as I can give you, and thanks to all of you for listening, and of course, to Anders for keeping us on the rails, and we'll talk to you again on Thursday. We'll be right back.